Spring turkey season is upon us, and don't be caught out in the woods without having Onyx Hunt on your phone. One feature Onyx has that is often overlooked for turkey hunting is their recent imagery filter with their elite memberships. This imagery is updated week to week, and it comes in extremely handy, especially when you're trying to find these gobble zones where these turkeys will go out in a high spot on a fresh clear cut and strut around all day long. Actually, I was just looking at it on Onyx where the timber company just came into Andrew's Club and did a very small clear cut along this creek. And I can see the high spots on the topographical map, but also I can see exactly where they mulch. And those are going to be hot spots for finding gobblers, especially mid-morning after they get off their hens, getting up on these little high spots in this fresh, small clear cut along the creek and strutting and gobbling all day long. If you want to give Onyx a try, you can actually download it for free, try it for 7 days. And if you decide to purchase, you can use the promo code Southern and save on your premium and elite memberships. So going into this turkey season, know where you stand with Onyx. Well, guys, we have some exciting news for you from Vortex about their brand new eyewear, their Banshee and Jackal sunglasses. Me and Andrew have had these for a few weeks now, right before the release, and we've been extremely impressed. They're awesome glasses, guys. And listen, if you're needing some new sunglasses, not only do they have the VIP warranty, but they're tough as crap, guys. Scratch resistant eyewear, it's extremely important. And also, they have safety features as well. So when you're out shooting at the range, again, these are rated glasses, so you are going to be more than protected when you're at the range. But they also look fantastic when you're out around town. So right now, Vortex has some special pricing on their website, which is vortexoptics.com for the new eyewear. But also, if you use the code Southern20, you get to save even more on this special pricing for right now at vortexoptics.com. Again, check out the new eyewear from vortexoptics.com and use the promo code Southern20 to save on their brand new eyewear.
If you live in the Gulf Coast region, you need to find yourself at the EcoWild Expo May 10th through the 12th in Mobile. It is the premier outdoor expo for the Gulf Coast region, and we're going to be there. We're going to have a booth. We're super excited about it. Can't wait to meet you guys that live down there. We absolutely love the Gulf Coast region, so to be a part of this show, we're super excited about. We're going to have past podcast guests there at our booth for you to talk to, guys who are relevant for your area, who you can talk to, you can pick their brain, you can joke with them, laugh with them, tell them your story, whatever you want to do. It's going to be awesome time. We're already working on some past podcast guests, but hey, if you live in this area and you have a suggestion for someone you want to see at that show, write in and we'll see if we can get them. There's going to be all kinds of exhibitors at the show that are focused on hunting, fishing, conservation, and recreation. There's going to be activities for the whole family there. They got axe throwing, archery. They're going to have our podcast booth. And then for the kids, they got touch tanks, a honeybee exhibition, a raptor show, kids fishing tank, BB gun range, and a butterfly house. So you're going to love it. Your kids are going to love it. It's going to be an awesome time. So head on over to EcoWildExpo.com to get more information on the show and to go ahead and grab your tickets. And hey, mark it on your calendar. May 10th through the 12th. Be there. We want to see you and we're excited to talk to you. So we'll see you at the EcoWild Expo this May 10th through the 12th at the Mobile Convention Center in Mobile, Alabama.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast. A little bit different today. We're actually sitting here at the cabin on a little hunting trip. We've got a room full of guys around us. So real quick, I want everybody to introduce themselves, starting with old Mike.
The Dilla.
Well, who's the Dilla?
Michael Pike.
There you go.
Shane Parker.
Christopher Leppert.
Greg Mayhair.
Talon Neal.
There you go. Awesome. Unfortunately, Andrew's not up here. He kind of, you know, So he has some stuff come up, so he can't be here on this episode, or on, really on the hunt. I think he might come up a little later in the week, but we're going to do a kind of a little hunt recap. It's been a fun time hunting some January rut action. Christopher came all the Chris came all the way down from Ohio. By the way, just real quick, what's the biggest difference between Alabama deer and Ohio deer when it comes to size?
There's a lot of differences. Yeah, our deer are significantly bigger up there, but it's been a pretty humbling experience to come down here.
So let me ask you this. Think of like a 140 back home and the body size, maybe a, you know, 3.5, 4.5 year old deer, maybe a 5.5 year old deer, how big that is as 140. Now imagine an Alabama buck, about 165 pounds to maybe 180 being the same size, what that would look like.
That would be, that thing would look like a king with a crown. That would be insane to see a deer of that size with that kind of rack.
Well, not to jump too far ahead, but we'll talk about what we have and have not seen on this hunt so far. Real quick, also, so Greg, you came in from South Carolina, so you made a little haul also with Meadow Creek mounts. So, by the way, we're going to, maybe, I don't know, we might have to do some a turkey episode in the spring. I got to plan my turkey episodes out anyways and talk some traveling hunting.
Sounds
from
good.
From another southerner. You also just got off a pretty cool little elk hunt. You had a little success over, it was Colorado, right?
Yep, that's right.
Opening day.
Opening day.
Public land.
Shot a big one.
Yeah, shot an absolute giant.
That's the whole story, but no.
I mean, yeah. It's quick enough. Did you say, were you in a tree stand, by the way?
No.
No?
That was when I was telling you the other story about the bear.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Well,
that was a year before, though.
Colorado's actually the only other person in here who's been to Colorado actually hunted was Chris, right?
Yeah.
How'd that trip go compared to?
It sucked. It's called hiking for $700.
It sucks the first few years. Well, it doesn't suck. It never sucks to be out west. But
it really doesn't. I shouldn't even say that. But the first year I went, I saw. So, all the people out west, I'm running into this. All the locals give me this advice. And I'm like, oh, yeah, the gospel of the Lord. So they're all telling me I got to be like 8 miles in and don't even look at a meadow. The elk will not be in the meadow. I go 2.5 miles in and they're laying in the meadow 50 yards off of the main hiking trail near a lake where everybody goes is a gigantic cow and her 3 calves. Those are the elk that I've seen in 2 trips. I've never seen or heard a bull. I've hiked up and down and across mountains, and I'm like 4'5", basically, so it's not easy to do that, to get over the deadfall. And that's probably like you talk about going out west, which you've been, and I don't know what your experience was like, but deadfall is it's abundant. Insane. Oh, my God. I packed in by myself and found that there was no water in the canyon where I was. You know, I dropped all my elevation. Oh, there's water down here. No, there's not. So then I spent all day long getting back up to the top. And it was literally like the side of the mountain is probably like a 50-degree angle. It is blanketed in dead pine needles. And you are stepping over pine trees, left lodgepole pines, left and right.
Every step takes a lot more energy.
It was terrible.
Over that stuff.
And again,
so don't go, guys. So there's more over the counter tax for the rest of us, right?
Being a short guy is not easy out west.
Yeah. Oh, man. Also, again, kind of doing a recap. We're about to talk about this river bottom hunt that we've been doing here for the last few days. Talon, you've had a pretty good season. How many bucks have you killed, by the way?
Two
in Alabama?
Yep.
Okay, awesome. Also, Michael Pike here, tagged out. So you're, you know. You're here for moral support, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, more or less.
More or less. I don't know what you've had success on this hunt before, and you know you're not giving us any hot tips. So
I'm trying to put you on spot, so nobody wants to go.
Well, listen, you know, me and Seth might pick you up on it. We might go somewhere else though. We're trying to figure out what we're going to be doing. Shane, since the last time you've been on, I think last time you were on was that the Georgia hunt or
Georgia hunt. Yeah.
Okay, so a lot of things have progressed since then.
Yeah.
Talk to me real briefly. When it came into the season and everything, and we've had a lot of time that's kind of passed since the last time you came on. By the way, we had really good feedback from the episode we did in Georgia talking about the whole thermals and thermal hubs and everything. You got to see how many questions we had written in about when he says a west-facing thermal hub, thermal hub. How is that again? Like, how does that, yeah, how is that faced? Just everything else is pretty interesting. But actually, I think we had 4 or 5 listener success stories come from that episode.
Wow.
That's nice.
Which is kind of cool. Nice. So guys actually took what you said, applied it, and, you know, had some success.
Awesome.
I did and did not have any success. So shame on you, Shane.
Shame on me. Got to stop giving information.
But anyways, you've had a pretty crazy fall, and we'll probably do a little bit more of an update maybe with you at another time, because I want to talk to you about some postseason scouting, because that's something I want to try to maybe focus on a little bit this year and, and learn some areas that maybe had a little success in, but want to kind of expand, you know, some more knowledge and everything else. So anyway, and then, Michael Bike, you just tagged out, man, just quick and easy. Because you haven't been on since – actually, no,
I was on the – the campground.
The campground. So that was really last episode, which came out like sometime in October.
And he finished hunting like a week later. He killed everything like in that little span. You know?
Yeah, there was.
Hey, I'm just glad I recovered all of them.
That's true. Yeah.
He's giving me. So we started off the season. He's trying to outdo me with the scouting, and I think he was pretty successful. Now he's trying to outdo my shooting skills too. So I'm gonna be number two. Like,
I keep missing. But I mean, you know, what is the old saying? You miss 100% of the shots you don't take, so you might as well just.
I'm just trying to keep up with them.
Hey, I'm right there with you, Talon. God.
Talon's like, just let me follow y'all with a gun.
Yeah,
I got to have Shane taking off days so I can get more steps than him.
Yeah.
I've quit. I didn't walk any yesterday, so. You should be good. That's when he was saying that about steps. I was thinking. So my 12,000 would be like your 30,000.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's definitely visible when I'm with any other human being in the woods.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have to go back to the truck 2 or 3 times to get you.
Probably.
Dang, Chris, wore out. You gonna take that?
Hey.
Hey, you remember he's an Alabama fan too.
Yeah.
Roll Tide.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. How are the Alabamians
doing? Go Blue.
How's those elephants faring? I'm going to have like 30,000 people ready to kill me.
That's pretty accurate. Shane, it's been an interesting season. But the cool thing is we're – all these other people, kind of like Chris, well, I guess y'all still have quite a bit of season left because Ohio goes for a long time. But a lot of people, if you're in the Midwest, season's kind of it's
dwindling way down
it's
for
dwindling,
almost
if not,
everybody.
Yeah, if not, you know, coming to a conclusion here. Us in Alabama, some guys in Mississippi, Arkansas, Georgia closes in like a week or so. But we still have a lot of season left, which is kind of cool. And then also like the rut, which goes into kind of a factor for where we're hunting, we decided to do this big deer camp, hunting Big River Bottom, and just, you know, bounce around from different pieces of public, or really bounce around from the piece of public, and see what we can get into. And Chris, everybody here got invited to come down. Well, Talon, I think you were already coming, but we had, you know, this whole group put together, and Jacob Emery was here. He left a little early, so he wasn't able to join us on the podcast. But it's been a very mixed bag of observations and opportunities, could we say?
You can just say it. You can say it. Go ahead.
So
Yankee boy came down and got his butt whipped. It's all right.
Well, you know, I'll let you say it then. I mean, you already did, but it's interesting because the thing is, the South is something very interesting because just the habitat diversity and just the difference of the woods. And Chris, this is something I want to ask you before you came down here. I'm sure you already had in your mind what these, you know, what the river bottom would look like, what the terrain, the habitat would look like. How similar or how off was your imagination of what this was actually going to look like?
Significantly off in multiple ways. So where I was yesterday, I didn't expect it to be so dry and yet have so many little waterways in it. I thought it would be feast or famine with either, you know, I didn't think I'd be like, oh, dry, crunchy leaves and hard ground, and then all of a sudden, here's another ditch I got to cross full of water. So, and then, you know, I've said this 1,000 times since I've been here, but I can't get over the mud. I knew it, but you don't know it until you go out there and battle it. And my first night trying to get my kayak back into the water took like probably 30 minutes. just trying to get it into the water because the water is that deep and there's this much mud or more. And I'm just shoving it into the mud and it's creating like a suction effect, like when you get your boot down in there. And so now I can't get the damn thing back out. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to have to text them and let them know I'm going to be a little longer. But yeah, the mud was pretty overwhelming and just it's completely different down here, man.
So you also got to experience, I think, y'all don't have a Chinese privet up in Oklahoma, do you?
No.
What's that like?
So I will say we have something pretty similar, which is the autumn olive. Mm-hmm. But the autumn olive is, in my opinion, a little tougher to get through because it hangs lower and there's like little thorns and stuff on it. The privet's a little easier to get through, but it grows thick. It is a, like when you told me there's a wall, it's a wall. Couldn't get over that. Never seen that in my life. So creates a hard edge though.
Yeah, it does. That it does. Which brings into where I want to get Greg into this conversation because Greg, you hunted Alabama last year, hunted the same river bottom.
Yep.
This year, from what you told me, it's complete 180 for you when it comes to opportunity and everything.
Yeah, I was around for about 3 days last year, and I'm not a ground guy, and I never got in a tree. Scouted around a good bit, found a little bit of sign, but this year has been completely different. Just a little bit different area, a little bit different habitat, hunting kind of real close to the edge of the privet and I've seen three shooters, so got one more morning, so hopefully I'll get one in the morning.
Which kind of brings in the point I was going to bring up with the privet. Explain, like, when it comes to, like, the sign, like, what did you see specifically when you went into this area that, like, you didn't see last time that was, like, so impressive, like, hey, I've got to stay here? Because the thing is, you're probably going to kill, well, you climbed one tree, I don't know how many times. That tree might die.
I climbed that tree about four times, but I've hunted five different trees in that one area, and if I would have been in the one that I was in this morning all week, then I would have already shot two of them. So they've both walked right by it. But once they get by there, they go different ways. So it's kind of honing in on them, hopefully.
But that area is a privet thicket that's got quite a bit of sign around it, right?
Yep.
So I'm just curious because you found something that I've kind of found, but not to that extent. What sign did you see that actually was like, hey, I'm going to hone in on this?
All right. So the first morning, the first day I got here, I scouted the afternoon and just found a lot of rubs at the back of a kind of an open area. The privet was kind of more open in there. You can maybe see 50 yards on the ground, but you climb up, you can see 150 yards in two directions, and then you can see a wall of privet. So I climbed there the first day because when I saw all these rubs in this area, I just tiptoed out of there. Got in there that next morning, just saw a few does, and then I just pushed in further. So really what I'm kind of in a pinch point where it's real thick privet and there's more rubs, trails, scrapes. Not many of the scrapes are being worked right now, but the few that are right there in that one little pinch point where I've climbed basically 3.5 days I've hunted there. So
talk to me about that first encounter with that first shooter and like how that played out.
Yeah. So I was sitting there and I see a doe coming. She's going to come right through the pinch point and she's probably 50 yards at this point and she just kind of disappears behind a tree. So I just watch her and she doesn't move like 10 yards in about 10 minutes. And I'm kind of wondering what's going on over there. So she ends up going on the edge of the swamp, kind of walking away from me. Well, then I see the buck just standing about 15 yards, just kind of staring at her. And she still is barely moving. So I'm standing up at this point once I see the buck and realize it's a shooter. And he just looks at her and he'll kind of look around. He doesn't really move. Well, I start hearing water walk. And I'm like, why is she walking through the water? There's this good dry land, but these deer do not care. 6, 8, 10 inches of water might as well be dry ground. So, you know, even though most of the signs are out there crossing, if you go to the edge of the water, they're crossing there just as much. So they went through the privet at 40 yards. I was drawn back, and they just wouldn't stop. And that's the thick privet that I can literally at 10 yards in this one area, I can't even shoot. So it's kind of open around it, and there's a few trails that I can shoot, but where they went through was 40 yards. That's when he kind of started to push her a little bit, but it seemed like he was locked down, like it was about to happen, even though I haven't really seen much other rutting activity as far as chasing or anything. But that one just seemed like seemed like it was about they were going to go somewhere, and he was just going to lock her down out on kind of like a little point he could lock her down on in the open around it with some thick privet. So I think that's what happened. I sat there all day with no food.
Yeah, I know. That's what I wanted to kind of get to. So you decided to stick out. And I remember that morning because we woke up and from the camp and rolled out. I'll make my sandwiches. Yeah. Like, man, I'm going to have my food in the bowl. I'll come back to the truck.
Yeah.
And get my food and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, just happened. You getting some pretty good activity. And next thing you know, he's starving afterwards.
Yeah. But, I mean, when the area they went to, like, I just knew they were going to come back by because it was kind of – I didn't think they were going to keep going. They might have stayed out there all day. You know, like I said, I could only see about 40 yards the direction they went. But, yeah, I sat there and I was pretty hungry by the time we got back together that night because it was just us that night.
Yeah.
No one else was here.
Yeah. So you know, that's kind of interesting. But this can kind of come into play as we're talking a little bit more about the hunt and everything is, you know, you kind of stuck with the spot and got other observations on other shooters in the same really, to be honest, a really small area that's just all this activity. And it's like, you know, I wasn't terribly far from you and didn't see anything for 2 days. I saw a spike. And then Talon shows
luckily
up.
Luckily, he went this way.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It shows up, and, you know, I had a pretty good encounter with Talon. What was the situation? Because originally, you were going to go to a different area, right?
Yeah, I was going to go to that one spot you were telling me about. And then he's like, you want to go for a boat ride? I'm like, might as well.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure he says something about the area, but it kind of went through one ear out the other. And then I dropped me off on the bank, and I was looking at the map, and I was like, okay, I ain't got time to scout. I don't want to be sit down. So on the map, I can see there's a good funnel connecting two pieces. And I was like, okay, I'll go there. That'll be my best chance, not scouting. And when I got in there, it's probably 15, 16, maybe 30 minutes after I sat down. I had a little basket rack buck right beside me to my right, probably 10 yards from me. And then nothing else till about 7:15. Then I caught a big six working along, going to that point probably 20 yards from me, but it's in a bunch of that thick privet. Mm-hmm. And as dim as it was, I couldn't pick out any shooting lanes in there. So I was like, okay, I'll grunt at him. He'll come along this funnel and stay in cover, get downwind of me, and I have a shot. Well, he did the complete opposite of what I thought, and he went in the green field, you know, 100 yards out, got my wind and took off. But yeah, it was a learning experience. But
yeah. Also, did you scout around much after that?
I did afterwards. Yeah.
So that area when I was in there, there's tons of tracks, trails, and there's some rubs in there. But like all the rubs I found, it's nothing like Greg where you're at, where it's just a lot of fresh sign. It's like a lot of signs seemed like it had been made, you know, 2 weeks ago, probably 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, and where that buck was headed, it was actually a bedding point. But when I grunted at him, that got his interest to come out. See what was going on, but there's a lot of little like early season little points out there when the crops are up or think they're hanging out up.
Yeah, absolutely. So, just when I didn't get any of y'all's messages by the way this morning for whatever reason, and all of a sudden they all popped up, and I'm like,
how does Jacob never have service out of everybody?
I don't know, but like it all of a sudden,
how convenient.
I just like leaned out of the tree away from the tree because me and Seth were sky high and a giant red oak, you know, not in the best cover. Anyways, I got all these messages, and I saw where you were like, hey, saw a buck. And I didn't realize what time it was, so I thought it was like I thought these messages just came through. I'm like, oh, man, they're moving. It's 9:30 in the morning. And then I'm like, then I look at the date and look at the time. I'm like, crap, that was at, you know, 6, you know, 25 and 7:15. I'm like, okay.
See, he was on the ground, and he had already seen a deer before I got settled into the tree, and I was up before I could shoot, but he had already seen one.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
Very good morning.
Can you pass some luck over here, like rub my head or something? Maybe we'll have that opportunity tomorrow. And then, Chris, give me a little rundown from, like, you know, on your side of stuff. Because I'm trying to get to the guys who's been hunting for a couple of days. Because, Shane, you just got here today? Yeah. And, Pike, you came in yesterday. But, Chris, what about you?
Well, I put in 5 miles yesterday. And I saw a deer about 200 yards away. Got into this area where there was a lot of blowdowns, super thick cover, lots of water along it. And I thought, man, this is going to be the spot. And I did find a lot of buck sign in there, but you know, anybody who's ever tried to find a buck in November in the Midwest or, you know, down here now, you generally want to go looking for the does. So I thought, well, I'm going to keep going and try to look for some of these privet thickets that you guys talk about or something. And I found some privet, but I don't think I would classify it as a thicket so much as like a wall bordering some privet where I felt like the deer would filter off and come in and feed. And I did find one like nut all, I guess, a little tiny acorn dude. There was some decent feed sign under it, but never did have a deer come in last night. And then this evening, got on the edge of a swamp, had an island across, with a lot of like, tall native browse, super thick island. And, was just in, you know, kind of like what he said, like this little funnel where I felt like deer would filter into. And again, found oaks with better feed sign, actually. I thought, man, I better sit here and no deer. So I don't really know what I'm doing down here.
So let me, and this is kind of a general question for everybody and kind of take it, you know, as y'all want, but like, Chris, what was like your game plan going into it? Like, what were you like expecting? Because I mean, you kind of looked at some maps, but like, what were you like? What have you been trying to look for? And like, what are you finding? But like, what's not paying off? Because what I want to try to do with like part of this episode is like some like lessons learned. Because I've learned some stuff too of like what not to do. So,
well, I think the deer are spread out a lot more here than they are at home for sure. I didn't think I'd walk anywhere near that far and not find deer, basically. Like, I've seen some while walking around, but one each time. Like, not jumping five. I'm not jumping does. I'm jumping doe. So, I honestly just expected there to be a lot more deer. Now, talking to Andrew and some other people, seems like it's pretty pockety here, where like when you're in them, you're really in them, and when you're not, kind of like elk hunting maybe. But it's just very humbling, I guess, because back home it would be so easy to get on deer. You could walk almost anywhere and jump up deer at home. So it's completely different. But there's also not as much habitat at home. Like, there's a lot of places a deer can go here. So
I'll say this. You just pumped up a lot of Southern boys' egos by saying
probably.
That.
Probably.
Hey, Trevor's over here like, yes, sir, let's go to the Midwest, is, man. Baby.
It's no, not,
we already know.
It's not easy.
And then, I mean, Greg, what were you originally looking for? I mean, of course, you know, you kind of found this one spot, but yep. Like, what were you trying to look for? Because you scouted some other pieces, too, before you kind of settled on this one spot. But, like, what were you trying to find in order to feel confident?
Yeah, so, I mean, I kind of knew what the area looked like, you know. Unfortunately, Chris didn't. He didn't have any idea what it was going to look like when he got here. Mm-hmm. You know, I hunted the same sort of area last year. So, you know, just looking for thick, just looking for buck sign, really. That's pretty much it. There's plenty of food everywhere. Last week on the podcast, was it Jake? What was the guy from North Carolina?
Jacob Leishen.
Yeah, he was talking about how, you know, the deer in the Southeast, you know, they don't have to worry about food at all. So, you know, look, this time of year, looking for the thick cover is where it's at. So
yeah, and I'll say this, going into this hunt, I was thinking the same thing, like thick cover, because, you know, I've hunted around here before at different times of the year, but, you know, I knew thick cover was going to play a factor, but what I was going into, and this is what kind of bit me in the butt, I was trying to focus on what I thought was pretty good rut funnels, kind of pinching down with water and stuff, like with, you know, yeah, with the river and everything. And it just has not paid off.
Yeah.
You know, there's some areas that like we've gotten to good sign. And the problem is, and this is something I've realized, because this is the second time I've hunted river bottoms this year. I hunted Arkansas river bottoms, and then now, you know, here in Alabama, some river bottoms. And it's like going back and forth between the two. One thing I've realized is like in those river bottoms, even if there's no rain, the ground is typically so soft. Oh, yeah. You see tracks really well, which is kind of deceptive of how many deer are coming through an area and how often they are. Cause you're like, you know, I found some tracks actually where Talon went, or some trails where Talon went. And I'm like, this is incredible. Like, I told a couple of you guys, I'm like, a blind guy could follow this trail because it's looks 3 feet wide and walled out. But that could be four does coming through there, you know, once a day. And the ground's so soft after 4 or 5 days, it looks like that.
Yep.
Instead of there being 50 deer there and a bunch of bucks. So I think that's one thing I kind of took for granted, where I was like stopping at some of that sign instead of like pushing further and some of that stuff, which we still have a few days left. But that's something I feel like it's kind of bit me in the butt the first 3 or 4 days on this trip, is like I'd find some of that, maybe find some rubs close to it. And I'm like, okay, this is good enough. And it wasn't like, maybe you have an encounter, you know, like a couple sits now, haven't seen a deer. And it's like, well, they're coming through at some point. It might be 2 o'clock in the morning, but you know, it's not where they're at right here, right now. And, that's been like a really big takeaway I've seen. Cause like typically in like hill country, it's like, you don't find a ton of tracks depending on like where you're at, like maybe a creek cross or something like that. And then after like a fresh rain, just cause you know how the soil types are typically, but, it's like down the river bottoms is like, it's cool to see a track. But it's also one of those things that's like, you need to take it with a grain of salt of like, where that deer is coming from. Where is he going? Is it actually, are you finding a track in the area that, first off, can you backtrack or can you follow where he went? And is it in like a place that more than likely you're actually going to see a buck during daylight? And all these other factors. But on the flip side, Shane, you sent us a text message today. You were cutting some tracks.
Yeah.
And found something pretty interesting at the end of the track. So, walk us through that with the scouting aspect. I'm interested in that story, but also like your game plan afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, initially when I got here, I just went to one specific area that I'd kind of pinned, and immediately cut a big buck track that was really fresh. Like I could tell it's fresh. And when it petered out, that's where the buck expired. And I found basically cart tracks that led right to where they had picked him up at. So,
well, in a little more detail, I think you put in the message, it looked like at one point he jumped or did.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell where he'd stopped in the mud, and right then he bolted. Like you could see he bolted and there were specks of blood. And so he got tagged right there. And I didn't follow it anymore. I knew at that point in time, I'm chasing the ghost here. Yep. And it wasn't very far. I hit the road and there was a cart track and they drug him right, pulled him right to the truck and loaded him up. So, and probably that was probably yesterday. The mud was still fresh, so it was yesterday afternoon when they killed that buck.
Interesting situation. I had the same thing happen to me a couple of days ago. I went walking on part of the public and hiked way back into the spot. I was doing a loop and I came upon a really good rub line. I'm like, man, it's super fresh rubs. Mm-hmm. And I start following this rub line, kind of looking down, looking up, you know, kind of scouting my way back. All of a sudden, I look up. I'm like, man, those leaves sure look red. And I walk over there, and there's a blood spot that's probably 3 feet wide where someone had deer die. They gutted it right there. It's probably been a couple of days old. Mm-hmm. You know, the guts were gone, but all the blood's there. And then I start looking, and you can see the drag marks where the guys drug it out. Yeah. And I'm like, literally there's a big rub 6 feet from where they gutted that deer.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing with this one was I could tell where he was going. He was working a scrape line, like along the edge, like just inside the privet, just outside the, like it was like a field, a woodlot, privet on both sides, and he was between the two. And so I was like, well, he was working that, and they killed him yesterday, so that's probably what they're doing. And that's just what I've been looking for since then, is those edges, like those little gaps between the fields and stuff like that.
And one thing you mentioned was you were finding the scrapes he was working, but he wasn't pawing the scrapes. He was just hitting the licking branch.
Yeah, he was just working the licking branches. That's, looks like. Yeah,
that's what the buck yesterday, the second shooter that I saw yesterday, was doing. And I even went and looked at the scrape, and you could hardly even tell he'd been there. It was only the licking branch. Yeah. So
this is something I've been wanting to ask everybody. And Greg, I want to ask you first, because you have a ton of experience. You were telling me this, like you kind of grew up, you know, hunting from a boat and you know, boat access, getting to spots. If you were to explain river bottoms to somebody who doesn't hunt river bottoms, what is the advantages or and disadvantages of like hunting river bottoms and, you know, boat access and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So, you mean just specifically for boat access? Of course, you know, it's quieter, all that, but being down in the river bottoms to me just seems like, you know, when you're seeing these huge rubs, stuff like that, where you get up in the hill, I just feel way more confident when I'm in an area like that, even though, I mean, you know, the deer can be anywhere. You just feel the confidence is what really helps a lot. So,
what's the disadvantages you'd see with like hunting river bobs? Because you hunt hill country too.
Yeah, well, like what, like you were saying, easy to see sign. You might sit somewhere where you think is great, and it's really not. When if you really know what to look for up in the, I mean, most of the big deer I've ever killed were on feed trees. So I'm, you know, a lot of those were in river bottoms or up in the hills a little bit, but it's just a different way to read the sign. So. Harder to see sometimes, but when you find it, you really know you're in a good spot.
Houndstooth Game Calls is your home for turkey calls this spring. Go check them out. They got all the classic turkey calls. You know, they got the pot calls and the box calls and the mouth calls, but they also got a couple really interesting calls. One of them is called the success call, and you just need to go look it up. It's like a box call that you can work with one hand. It's really, really cool. Sounds incredible. They also got the Spurmaster, which is another very unique call that you can get some really unique, clean tones out of. They're going to help you out this turkey season. Use the promo code SOP20 to get 15% off of your order at Houndstooth Game Calls. That's SOP24. Use it at checkout. It helps the podcast.
Man, Mark's Outdoors is your one-stop shop for everything outdoor and shooting related. They're a family-owned business that's been around for over 40 years now, been serving the Birmingham area, but now they have opened their doors to everyone across the United States through their online store. Again, me and Andrew have been using Mark's Outdoors for years now. They have unbelievable supplies of literally anything that we need we can pick up from Mark's Outdoors. They're even carrying different saddle companies, sticks, platforms, the whole nine yards at Mark's Outdoors. And again, if you don't live in Alabama and you don't want to make the drive to Birmingham, you can go over to their website, marksoutdoors.com, and actually shop on their online store to get awesome deals on different products that you may be needing right now and be able to get to in a very timely manner as well. So give Mark's Outdoors a try. We promise you, you'll enjoy them. They have unbelievable customer service and some of the best guys in the industry. TruLock Chokes has been made in Georgia since 1981 and offering a wide range of chokes, over 2,000 different chokes for all kinds of shooting activities. You might be wondering why you'd want to purchase a TruLock choke, and it's to improve your shotgun performance. Absolutely guaranteed. And as a great example, we have Andrew Maxwell here. And Andrew, you've had some pretty good luck, again, kind of switching out chokes and trying out the Precision Hunter choke from TruLock. So, Andrew, what's been your experience so far?
Yeah, I've used the same choke for several years now. I never really thought much of it, and I got the TruLock choke in. I patterned my gun with the first choke at 30 and 50, and then I switched to the TruLock and changed from 30 to 50. And the 50-yard pattern on my gun with the TruLock choke is unbelievable. Like, everybody's jaws were dropping. Like, when we were out there with Mike and Sam, we were all super impressed. I mean, it's throwing a better pattern at 50 now than it was throwing at 40 before my old choke.
And Andrew, you're shooting the Precision Hunter choke from TruLock. It's a great option. Same chokes I have in my shotgun. So guys, if you want to give TruLock a shot this spring, you can head over to TruLockChokes.com. That's TruLockChokes.com. You can also use the promo code Southern at checkout at TruLockChokes.com and save 10% on your order. Again, give TruLock a shot this spring, especially if you're not happy with the performance of your shotgun, and shoot with a more deadly pattern with TruLock. Now, Talon, I want to ask you the same question too, but again, your first sit, you see a shooter, so you might not have a lot of disadvantages at this point, but do you have much other experience hunting river bottoms before?
No, this was my second time up here. Really, honestly, second time river bottom. But the advantages I see with it is, you know, you can find a buck a lot easier, because like where I usually hunt, you don't find a buck track. You got to keep finding until you find that next rub or you find that next trail. Yeah. Versus here, I can be like, go to like the field and be like, there's a buck track, buck in the area. Let's find that trail where he's in and out. And that's been really, it's made it a lot easier and gives you confidence. Like, yeah, I know he's here.
Yeah.
I know he's here now because there's still, you know, muddy water floating in it versus not having that at all.
Now, let me ask, what you hunt a lot of hill country. Mm-hmm. So what would you see as a disadvantage with hunting bottoms compared to, like, say, hill country? Is there any disadvantage that you would have?
Yeah, definitely, because coming from what I usually do, I'm like, oh, man, there's a buck track. Bam. Well, he's probably using a lot of this, and that's where I think a lot of people could mess up. They say, oh, there's a buck trail here. Well, that may just be an evening trail. That might just be a every now and then trail. Find where he's going in and out. And I think you could get messed up just focusing on that tracks and all that sign, because it does stay there much longer than it would in hill country.
Shane, I want to ask you the same thing. What is, you know, you hunt a lot of hill country as well. What do you see as a advantage but also a disadvantage when it comes to hunting river bottoms?
Well, the advantage is, you like you said, the sign is more readily readable. Like, you can read the sign easier. The disadvantage is there's nothing in a river bottom. There's no swirling wind for a buck to go seek out. So you have to find those little intricate, like, habitat edges and things like that that they seek out, the thicker cover. Whereas, like, in the hill country, a buck will go seek out an area where the thermals are doing this at a certain time when he can take advantage of it. Or there's swirling winds in a certain, like, thermal hub, and he'll hang out in that because he can feel safe. Whereas you're on the river bottoms, that doesn't really exist, and the only thing you got to go on is, like, the habitat itself and wind direction, to me. So that's a disadvantage of it, is you don't have really that to play off of, that advantage of thinking, well, I can go find somewhere where he's going to hang out in. So it's got a lot more to do. You probably got to cover – it sounds backward, but you probably got to cover a lot more ground in river bottoms than you would think you could – in the mountains, because in the mountains you can go hit certain areas and you can just eliminate, like, whole areas that there's not going to be a buck in, because it's either wide open timber or they're just not going to travel through it. And here they can travel anywhere. You know, if it's walkable by us, it's walkable by them.
And so, water doesn't
affect them one bit.
No. Yep. I think, again, we got a couple people behind the camera that don't have mics, but Miles is over here. And he was talking about, you know, just one of his cousins, duck hunter, like, seeing deer swimming, like, just, like, across one of these big creeks and everything. And it's like, the more and more duck hunters I talk to, it's like the way they describe, like, buck encounters, it's like almost like they're aquatic. Like, every time they're in the water, like, they got decoys out, the bucks swim through the decoy spread. They're, you know, slipping down the edge of a slough, you know, in, you know, 2 feet of water or whatever, or swimming across a slough or swimming across a creek. And it kind of takes into consideration, like, when you talk to, like, more duck hunters of, like, where and when they see bucks, it's like they're in the water typically.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. It's like,
yeah. I mean, it was like today, everywhere that I seen, like, I thought I'll get on a dry patch and that's got to be where they're at. And all the trails are just right along the edge, right in the mud, you know. And when you get on that dry patch, there's like, there's nothing, you know. Like, that one that the buck that I did end up jumping went to a little dry patch. But, I mean, it wasn't no bigger than where we're sitting right here. And everything around it was just flooded out, you know, knee-deep water, you know.
Did you jump a buck today?
Yeah. That big one that was in the field.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, ended up.
Starts a message thread. Okay. Doesn't partake in the message.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing that message. I just remember him saying, hey, there's a big deer here. So, yeah.
No, like, I ended up going and getting something to eat, coming back after I'd seen him crossing the field. And I was like, he doesn't have any options to really go anywhere else. Like, he's kind of pinned in that one area, unless he wanted to swim across the river. And I didn't figure that was an option. Seeing how he's got a doe with him, you know, he's trying to push her into one area. So I ended up walking back down in there like an hour later, and he was on the only, like, patch of dry. Well, he was standing in the water, but he had her pushed up on a dry patch, I'm assuming, because she blew out the one way and he went the other way.
Interesting. Yeah. All right, Chris, I got to ask you, advantages, disadvantages for hunting river bottoms.
Well, it's interesting hearing everybody talk about this, because back home, everything I'm hunting is pretty tight, and it's actually sets up a lot more like hill country. So I actually don't find any disadvantages other than the work you have to do to access in and out, portaging and stuff like that. It sucks. But, I mean, you can literally control your thermals. Nothing can see or smell you. You can get in and get out, and you can generally read how the buck's going to use a drainage ditch or a secondary slope or whatever to come down, cross the river, whatever he's going to do. Here, I'd have to agree 100%. Like, it's like talking to Dan Infault or something hunting the marshes. I'm learning a completely different way of thinking about thermodynamics down here. I can feel my thermals pulling to the water in the evening. Just all the different little intricacies like that. if you don't know that right away and don't know to pay attention to that, which a lot still don't, that'd be a huge disadvantage.
I talked to somebody who hunts this religiously, and he said that and he's hunted this for 25 years. And he said that, and this is why I think I'm seeing so many tracks around the water, is because those thermals, the water is pulling that thermal, and that's where the deer naturally are. And he said, if you see tracks away from the water, he said, you can guarantee that's at night. If it's anywhere away from the water, he said, you can just about bank on it that it's nighttime. And he said, but everything around the water is pretty much going to be your daytime travel.
Do you think that is the juice of the podcast, ladies and gentlemen?
That's somebody that's hunted it for, and I had no clue he hunted it. And he's like, oh, yeah, where are you going? I was like, I'm going here. He's like, well, I've hunted that for 25 years. This is what they do.
That light bulb went off in my head, and then you literally said it.
I'm Why are we just now?
Yeah, what do you do? You didn't put that in a group message.
I just learned it last night. That's why I came up here.
Would have been a great message 3 days ago, Shane.
Yeah.
Do you think that's kind of like
that was like literally 12 hour ago.
Like kind of like a side of a ridge thing in hill country is kind of what they're doing on the side of the water. Same concept.
The top third of the ridge catching the thermals. Same. Yeah. Same exact thing.
That's what he said. It's just those big pockets of water just pulls the thermals right into it, and they just hang around it. You know, and that's where I've seen, you know, the deer today.
It was crazy too, because, you know, trying to relate things to hill country as best I can, because it's really kind of all I know, using terrain, sitting in that big draw yesterday. Well, the wind was pushing up it all day long, and I'm like, all right, well, sun got behind the trees, right back towards the freaking water. I'm like, Jeezle Pete's, okay, here we go. I got you. It's a big learning experience for me. I've never hunted a place this big. We don't have water like this back home at all. Not even close.
Michael Pike, I got to ask you the same question before we move on. What's your thoughts on advantages and disadvantages for hunting river bottoms?
I'd probably say you can't really get away from pressure in a river bottom.
That's a disadvantage.
Because people are willing to go. Also, a disadvantage is there are certain places that you can't easily access. It's either not big enough for a kayak or a boat, and too deep for a pair of waders.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have to pack something in there and set it up, or, you know, if you did something like a kayak, have to drag it a really long ways. So that would be a disadvantage. Advantage. It's just easy. I mean, the trails are just laid out everywhere they're going. And if you're able to figure out what that trail is going to, you know, you're able to figure out paths of travel. So I don't know. To me, it's like a roadmap. You just got to figure out, you know, what, I don't know, destinations or whatever that each of these little, you know, trails go to. Totally different than where I'm hunting right now.
Yeah. Real quick, this is for everybody here. You talked about the whole trail thing, like being easy to kind of see point of travel. And I agree with that. It's just like, it's also like where me and Seth set up today. It's like there's three trails that weren't 10 feet from each other, paralleling each other. I'm like, what are they doing? Like, why would they take one over the other in this one spot? And it's not like they're necessarily funneled, you know, inside a 30-foot wide area in order to have, you know, three trails 10 feet wide from each other. But they were, and there's tracks in all of them. And, you know, it's a little complicated there. But does anyone here think, like, based off what they've seen and experienced as well, are these bucks running a lot of these major trail systems, or does it seem like kind of like in hill country, they're kind of running like a separate trail kind of off to the side of where you're seeing more of the doe traffic?
Say yes and no. I think it varies how the terrain lays out, or like what I've seen today is there was bunch of doe tracks here, but I've only seen two bucks in this spot, but the doe tracks were there. The sign was there that does were coming back and forth. However, that one buck did split off from that and didn't go completely through that funnel. So
here's something too. Sometimes when you get those trails that split off, sometimes they can be in feeding areas. You know, you got does that travel, you know, kind of in behind each other, but like, whenever you get to like a more of like a feeding area, they tend to like branch out and feed around. And the only reason I noticed that is because we were down in South Alabama and we got that snow that year. And I was able to follow all these tracks and there was a really, really heavy trail. And then all of a sudden it branched off. And then I was able to see exactly like what they're actually feeding on. But you know, that would be my guess is one of the reasons why. Maybe different different water levels or different bedding sites. I mean, any of that could play in.
Shane, do you have something?
Yeah, I mean, it's like the location that I went in second today, and I'm going to go in there tomorrow. There's a big swamp right in the middle of it, and it's like there's just fingers of trails coming out of that swamp. And they're going. I can see tracks going in and out, in and out, in and out. The same thing with all the rubs. The rubs are going in and out of it. So it's like he said, like Michael said about. It's almost like those deer know those areas that nobody can go into, and they're the swampiest, nastiest stuff that there is. So instead of looking at it like, when you hunt this area or hunt an area like this, instead of looking for like that thick cover, you're almost looking for, like the areas where you can't get a boat or you can't get in with waders. Those are the areas that I think are holding the deer. And it's not so much the thick cover that's holding them. It's like, I could see through that swamp, but it's just so big that I can't see all the way through it and I can't get into it, but they can. I mean, they have no problem getting in there. And there may be a little high spot somewhere in there. It's just like marsh hunting. Like there's just these probably little pockets where they can go seek out and lay down and bed in. But unless you're walking through that, you're not going to know it, you know. So I think instead of looking at it like, oh, I got to find a, you know, a real thick area where they're going to bed up into, it's probably going to be those swampy areas like a marsh or something
like
that.
Tough to access,
it's going to be really hard to access for anybody. You're not going to walk through it. You can't pull a boat through it. And that's probably where your bucks and your, you know, most of your does are at.
Now I'm trying to think of examples of stuff I've ran into that was a setup like that from this hunt. That's an interesting point. It's kind of like, so a past guest that we had on, by the time this episode came out or has come out, it's been, you know, a few weeks ago, Jacob Leishen, Greg, you just mentioned him earlier in the episode. He mentioned on some of his public, he hunts in North Carolina. He hunts a lot of river bottom stuff and like these big open river bottoms. And he's like, it's a transitional area where they're kind of going from thick cover, and they'll kind of go through these bottoms. But also at certain times of year, they'll bed in those bottoms in like little isolated cover where like they can see you coming from a long ways away. You can't see them, but that buck can see you. Mm-hmm. And it makes it super hard to try to go and kill him with a bow because, you know, he can see through 500 yards of wide open timber. But he's just bedding like a blow down, a brush top, something like that. So the only time you'd see him maybe is if he jumped up and maybe you get a glimpse of him, but more than likely he's going to slip out the backside before you ever, you know, get close enough to lay eyes on him.
Yeah, like I found beds today, and that's the only place I'd found beds was in just like wide open. Like there was, I mean, it was like grass. It was like less than knee high, and it was just open. And that's the only place I found, like, I know that's a buck bed, you know, like I could see it there. And looking back at it, when I walked up, like, he's just off the side of where he made a rub line, and he had a bed right there but with a log back up against his back. But behind that was a big open field. So he could sit there with, like, 25 feet between him and the field and look out over the, you know, he could see 300 yards in front of him all the way to a road, the access, the only access in there. So, you know, he probably was laying there when I walked in, you know.
That's a good point, because that's one thing I notice about a disadvantage to flatland is I feel really naked out there because there's nothing to hide me. I mean, you can see at least 200 yards at all times, and there's no breakup. You run your white light, they're seeing it for no telling how long. There's a 500-yard-long field.
Speak about the white light. Me and Seth had a situation. We set up this morning in this tree, and we're getting it, and we got in. It took us a little bit longer getting this gigantic red oak than I thought it would. And we finally get all hung up. It's gray light now. And all of a sudden, I see truck lights. And I'm like, there ain't a road. It looks like this truck was 100 yards from us. And there was not a road anywhere close to that distance. There's a road further than that, probably 350 yards. And you could see it like plain as day. It's pulling it like a utility trailer. And you could see the whole thing. And I'm like, are we sitting? Like, am I like messed up on the maps? Like looking at Onyx? I'm like, there's no way. But you could see the light all the way through. But when the sun came up, you know, when it was, you know, got good light, there was enough like obstruction. Like, I can't see that far, but you could see light that far. And yeah. it threw me. I was looking over there. I'm like, did we set up right next to someone's driveway that I can't see on the map? But no, it's like just the light would penetrate so far through that cover. But when the sun came up, it's like I couldn't see. You know, you could see maybe 100 yards through some of that stuff, but we're, you know, 20 foot per tree. But when you get on the ground, I can't see 50 yards. So yeah, that's kind of interesting. Tom, you brought that up.
I've walked up on two deer though in the dark here, with the green light, whether, you know, you use white, green, whatever, but that's what I had on. And one was bedded under my tree when I got there, one morning. And then yesterday evening, I pushed a little too far past the spot that I talked to you about for like 2 days, knew I should hunt it, went past it, and it kind of looked okay, and I hunted, didn't see anything. And then when I was walking out, there was literally a deer standing in the swamp. I stopped because my phone buzzed, and he was 10 yards from me, and he was probably going to let me walk by, honestly, because I was kind of shoot down this little road, and he went tearing through the water. Should have hunted there. So then I hunted there today and just saw three does. So
it happens. Absolutely. Yeah. Real quick, we're going to get to a point here wrapping up, but we got to talk about some camp shenanigans. Greg, talk to us about firewood here. Actually, maybe Michael Pike should talk to us about firewood.
Well, so we showed up. I bought, you know, I talked to Jacob before I came. I was like, should I get some firewood? He said, yeah, everyone can just bring some firewood. Well, I didn't bring any. So I bought some at the camp store. We could barely get it to light. And Jacob says, well, I've got a box that's been seasoned for 2 years. So we tried with some of that. Jacob Emery will tell you it didn't work. We tried all.
What do you mean it didn't work?
Well, we had to blow on it about every minute. Everything we could find, we tried to put on it. So then the next night, Chris was here. No, the next night was just me and you. It was the same deal. We had some ashes, some coals already started, some maybe dried out logs. Most of them would sizzle. Third night was kind of the same deal when Chris got here. And then last night, they even went to buy firewood halfway through the fire. We had a fire. What was the log you put on there?
The fire log?
Yeah.
It's this some fire starter from like Walmart.
So it's supposed to burn for 3 hours. Yeah. It burned for 2 or 3 hours with our wood on top of it, but literally our wood would still not burn. It was just caving it out where the other was burning under it. So.
Yeah.
Miles said he got some wood, so maybe we'll find out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then we actually had to resort to him putting his fan on the fire to keep it lit.
That kept us warm, but that wood just burned down so fast.
Yeah.
Pike, what's your take?
Yeah. That was a hot mess.
We were surprised the gas station was.
Did you go to
the, he said season. I'm pretty sure it was soaking.
Yeah. See, this wood
soaking
sizzled
in water for 2 years.
Yeah.
I said I could have went out there in the lake and grabbed a log that had been there and it would have burned faster than what he
meant
us.
Seasoned with like Italian seasoning, ranch or something.
Yeah.
Awesome. Oh, man.
Yeah. So did you find firewood at a gas station? When you, because that was like
it was
9:30, 10 o'clock,
the very last bundle, and I swear, each one of those things weighed 5 pounds.
Yeah, that was heavy.
They were waterlogged.
Yeah.
Waterlogged.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
You bought cypress.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you got some. You get some. What they call driftwood out of the river.
I said it's got to be better than what he's got.
Well, when you put the fan to it, it actually worked. Because a couple of fires we had, it was like. There was no flame come off. It was just like red coal, and like we're just like it's 28 degrees outside. We're like, this sucks. Like night we didn't even do a fire. Or like,
well, it was weird because it would be burning pretty good, a small fire, but it would be burning pretty good. And we'd start messing with something because it took Jacob about 3 hours to unload his truck.
Greg. That was only because the pine coals we were throwing on there.
Well, I'm talking about the previous nights. It would burn for a while, and we'd turn around and look, and it was just no flame. Yeah. So we'd have to go start blowing in again, throwing pine needles, pine cones on it.
Yeah, I said what we needed is a leaf blower. And then somebody said, Jacob's got a fan. And yeah. So we brought it over there. And, man, it did
magnificent good. Fire.
I said it's probably going to just dry the wood out before it actually caught on fire.
I got to say, I didn't expect my coldest night of any state I've camped in.
Well, you're also
to be the deep south. Campton, Nebraska, Wyoming, freaking Colorado. And the coldest night of camping I've ever had was right here.
Roll Tide.
Roll Tide.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Chris, that was so funny. I get in the tent last night and Chris rolls over. He's like been in the tent for like 10, 15 minutes. And he's like, how cold is it supposed to get tonight? I'm like 25. He's like, I can't believe the coldest night I've ever camped temperature wise is in Alabama. And then he just rolls back over and goes to sleep.
I had my bibs and everything on last night. I wasn't screwing around. We were making sure we were staying warm, and I stayed warm.
Yeah. Me too.
Talon had a sleep in his truck with just his camo on.
You didn't have a sleeping bag?
No, I forgot at the house.
Wow, that's what you meant by not being prepared. Oh, my God.
Yeah. See, my body was fine, but like 12 o'clock, my toes, my toes got cold, so I wrapped my puffy around it and my Carhartt jacket. Good rest of the night.
At least y'all got that. Mine's still in storage, all of mine. I'm just rolling with nothing.
I won't do it again.
Yeah. We all got beds tonight. Well,
yeah.
We do.
Yeah, back to the air mattress we go, baby. Yeah, no, it's fun. Anybody got any kind of final thoughts on the trip or anything? I think it's been pretty fun. As of the time of recording, you know, some of us will be hunting a couple more days. Chris, you leave out tomorrow.
Yeah.
Greg, you leave out tomorrow. So last little hoorah for you guys. Any final thoughts from you two?
I think we're going to go surround that deer that Shane saw.
I was thinking about it. Let's go wolf pack him, dude.
He's not going back in there, so we're just going to go surround
y'all
that morning.
Y'all go kill that one.
Okay.
Hey, y'all just get down through there, and I'll just run through there.
There you go.
Yeah,
he'll
I can't shoot. I'll be here.
He's tagged out.
Take your archery deer drive. Need it.
I'll help out the drive.
Yeah. No. Awesome. Well, sweet. Well, it's been a fun trip. I'm excited to kind of see if anything we've learned tonight, especially with Shane talking about the bucks are running towards the water and staying towards the water. Maybe we just all sit on the riverbank and see if we kill one in the morning.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to work for me.
No, you just go scout for us.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. Yeah, where you're going to be at. It's not like that at all.
No water.
No water.
No water.
No deer either. I don't start seeing deer until I get to the bottom of the mountain.
At least you're seeing them.
You know? Hey, I went down to pull my cell cam, and I get to the bottom. I hadn't seen anything all day long. I get down there, and I've already seen 3 deer out in the wide open. I was like, I've only been down here for an hour, and I got to head back up to the mountain for a couple more days before I see that amount of deer.
Well, you know, we're not jealous, so. Yeah. Oh, but did you have to wear waders to go get the camera?
No, but I do have one boot that's soaking wet. But it's only because the back end, evidently I walked them off. Kind of like this right here.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's leaking.
All right, cool. Awesome. Well, appreciate everybody listening to the podcast. Appreciate everybody watching the podcast over on YouTube. Thank you guys for joining and listening.
Thanks for having us.
We got some deer to hopefully kill. We need some wood to knock on. And make something happen. There you go, Shane. Shane will probably shoot one of them more. Let's just be honest here.
I mean, I'll miss another one probably.
Well, you know, someone's got to scare one to death. You shoot at it enough, you might scare it to death.
I might. That's a possibility.
But anyways, appreciate everybody joining the podcast, and we'll catch y'all back on the next episode from the Southern Outdoors. And remember, guys, y'all stay southern.
All right, guys, we're starting to get kind of close to summer here, and you know what my favorite part about summer is? The Mobile Hunters Expo. Y'all heard us talk about it a lot last year, and we actually got to meet a lot of you guys at that expo. Well, we're excited to announce we're going to be there again. This time it's going to be in Dalton, Georgia, June 28th through June 30th. We are going to be there all 3 days. We're going to have a bunch of past podcast guests there. We're going to have a booth where you can come by and grab some merchandise, and I'm sure we're going to be recording all kinds of podcasts there. If you're unfamiliar, the Mobile Hunters Expo is the place you you need to be. If you are the kind of hunter that listens to this podcast, this show was literally made for you. It is an excellent group of people that are going to be there. A lot of whitetail killers from around the Southeast are going to be there. You're going to get to talk to them, shake their hand, learn from them in person, make some connections. And guys, we get a lot of questions about, hey, which saddle should I get? Which tree stand should I get? What about this piece of gear? What about that piece of gear? How do I meet other hunters who want to hunt the same way that I do? You know, finding a good hunting buddy. The Mobile Hunters Expo is a place for all of that. So you guys, don't miss it. June 28th through the 30th, Dalton, Georgia. We'll see you there.